Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Brisbane has climbed the mountain again. Two premierships in the 2020s, the first club to do so. The first to win five this century. It's Code Sports After Dark. Ed Burke, Lauren Wood, Edward. And Josh Barnes with me outside great the MCG. Party music coming from all angles. A pretty amazing day to witness.
Incredible. I don't think any of us saw it coming, the blowout of that last quarter. I think at halftime you would have had bets each way and Brisbane just took over.
Yeah, they did. I thought there was an omen. I was standing in this very spot when the Geelong marching band and march of fans rolled through. I thought it might have been an omen. But, gee, Brisbane, they took a little while to get going, as both teams did. But, geez, once it worked, it really, really worked, didn't it? It was just amazing.
Yeah, quite an emphatic result there. I mean, you look at the 47-point margin. Felt a little bit like 2021, maybe, where Melbourne raced away from the Dogs. But the game was on a nice edge midway through the third quarter. But what do you think was the turning point in that third quarter?
It just felt like the midfield broke for Geelong, didn't it, really? They were sort of holding sway. They won some clearances but didn't do a lot with them. And then at a certain point, things just snapped for them. I don't know whether that was Lachie Neale taking over, but at some point, Brisbane just owned the centre and then Geelong's defence could do no more. I think those young defenders for Geelong held them together, really. Connor O'Sullivan, Jack Henry had a great day until those last sort of quarters. Lawson Henry's was very good until the last quarter and things just fell apart, I think, for the Cats.
I think the snapping might have been Jeremy Cameron's forearm, which we'll get to no doubt shortly. But as you say, I mean, Harris Andrews was just a rock down back. He gave Shannon Neale an absolute bath. And I'm sure Shannon wouldn't mind me saying that. I think he'd be the first to admit that himself. They just couldn't get into the game, could they, any of the Geelong forwards? And, I mean, Dane Zorko, like, it was just these experienced players, Hugh McCluggage, Zach Bailey, that really just led from the front. That isn't even touching on, of course, the Norm Smith medalist, Will Ashcroft, back-to-back, no less. So once, as I say, once it got going, I spoke to Hugh McCluggage in the rooms afterwards and asked him, was it anything specific that was said by the coach or one of the players? As we know, it can be even the unlikeliest names that can bob up with that little nugget of gold on moments like grand final day to sort of provide that spark. It was nothing. It was just once things got humming, you know, Zach Bailey finally managed to find the goals and it just went from there.
Yeah, he could have kicked eight, Zach Bailey. He probably kicked himself out of the Norm Smith. And he got a feel for the Norm Smith medal voters. Probably the most diverse array of contenders we've had in a grand final in some time. And you could see that in the voting. There are a lot of different ways. I went with Harris Andrews. You were very different. We weren't voting on the actual medal. And the
Code Sports After Dark medal.
Yeah, the After Dark medal. But a lot of different options. It was such an even game from those top-end Brisbane players.
Why did you vote for Harris Andrews?
I just thought when the game was on the line early in the third quarter, he was massive for them. Huge first half. He had a very consistent game, but it just felt like there was a passage of about 10 minutes when the game was hot where every single Geelong attack he stood in the way of. And it didn't help that they kicked it to him a couple of times. They kicked it straight to him. But he was just a rock for them, I thought.
Yeah, I did go for Ashcroft, just for the record.
Yeah, I gave him my three votes, Harris Andrews, because I thought there was the problem that Chris Scott just couldn't solve twice his final series. One time they won, the other time they just couldn't get around him. But Will Ashcroft, that's two Norm Smiths back-to-back. You got your votes, Lauren. What kind of ascendancy is this now for the mulleted one?
I'll take that. I mean, you throw it enough times, it's going to stick eventually, isn't it? So we've got to bask in our glory every now and then when it comes to these sort of predictions. But no, rare air, really. Back-to-back Norm Smiths. It's only been done twice before, of course, Andrew McLeod and Dustin Martin. The former, of course, being the chair of today's panel and gave Will Ashcroft the three. So it's an incredible club to be joining for Will. I just thought, as you said then, when the game was there to be won, he was the one that was really providing that drive. And it all stems back to his own highlights, no less. He told us in the rooms afterwards that he turned to YouTube this morning as he woke up just across the road from here at the Pullman Hotel and looked at his own highlights from last year. He doesn't normally do that sort of thing, but you know, something just came to him in that moment to turn back and have a look at what he was able to achieve. He's got incredible belief in his game. He's an incredibly confident individual, works just so hard on every aspect of his game. So I guess greatness inspires greatness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun to be in the Brisbane rooms after the game. Chris Fagan was in there nice and early, wasn't he? He was there having a bit of fun with the reporters, a lot of family and friends in there waiting for the players to come down. While they probably did a couple of laps in the end. They had plenty of time out there. And then when they came in, there were some great stories to be told in the aftermath.
Oh, it's my favourite part of the day, isn't it? I mean, the anticipation's there. We're obviously all on deadline for the newspapers across the country. So we are nervously looking at our watches, but they obviously soak it in. The families make their way in, and just that moment, you see the photographers come in first, and that's when you know the players are close. They were led in by none other than Oscar McInerney, of course, who was the heartbreak story in years gone by. He had the trophy aloft. It was magnificent. And none other than Dane Zorko, the big esky full of 4X yeah. gold, was waiting for them in true Queenslander style.
He was two legs deep in that esky.
He was pinging cans absolutely everywhere. So it was sort of put the helmet on and shield your head for a few of those moments there. But Darcy Wilmot, of course, got the song going. And the incredible scenes. Chris Fagan, I think his jeans were pretty wet as well after copping a bit of a soaking on the ground. So it's just amazing. Every single year, you know, you sort of think that this stuff would get tired, but I think for the Brisbane players, this one felt almost better than last year, and they celebrated in style.
Yeah, I've got two fears coming out of the rooms. The first fear is for Jonathan Brown. So Cam Rayner came up to him and said, "You owe us a haircut," after he promised yesterday he would get his hair trimmed like Kyle Lohman into a bit of a mohawk. Brownie's trying to avoid it, I think. He was, but then he said, "I'm in too deep now." So I think he's going to cop it tonight. He said, "Maybe I should do it now before they have a few more beers," which might be smart. And Darcy Wilmot also, I spoke to him after he was quoting Scary Movie to get the song going. And then he said, I said, "What lessons did you learn from last year to help you with the grand final celebration?" He said, "Go harder again this year." So
right.
I'm a little bit nervous about what state Darcy will be in tomorrow morning, but I'm sure he's going to have a great night.
I spoke to Jasper Fletcher. He was unequivocal that the second flag meant more to him than the first. And he said he was really upset for his good mate Jared Berry, but he was so happy that Oscar McInerney and Darcy Gardner could get that first premiership medal. He also spoke about what could have been a real turning point in the game when he was mowed down by Jeremy Cameron in the middle of the ground. A one-armed Cameron, just desperate arm out, brought Fletcher to ground. It could have been a big turning point for the Cats. They got a goal out of it. But Fletcher talked about his response to it. He just said it was a pound the rock sort of game. He had to get straight back up. Cameron really knocked the wind out of him as well. He needed help from the trainers, but he gets back up and has a massive second half and ended up getting best on ground votes from Luke Hodge.
Yeah. It was a real Captain Hook moment from Jeremy Cameron, wasn't it? He just hooked him in and reeled him over. I guess we have to talk about Jezza at some point. That was the moment, I think, where things really crashed down for Geelong, that injury. Their forward line, I've never seen it that dysfunctional in the past 3 or 4 years. They just couldn't get anywhere. Part of that was Harris Andrews, but their game style today was just going nowhere over and over again. Long bombs down the wing. It wasn't happening for them. Jezza was putting his arm wrapped in his jumper in the change room, so they fear it's a broken arm, and he could barely get in the game apart from that tackle after that collision with Patrick Dangerfield in the second quarter. How much did it ruin their chances, Lauren, do you think?
Oh, massively, Josh. I think it was all clear for all to see. The commentators in that moment were questioning two things there, that why he wasn't sent for a head injury assessment in that moment for that clash, and then also the arm. I mean, every station that you were listening to basically said he's broken his forearm. The way that he was carrying it, he was almost, you know, he was so limp in his arm and you know, carrying it like it was almost in a sling. And that was before he even got to the rooms. He spent, you know, a good sort of 10 to 15 minutes in the rooms. We were all waiting for the word to come through that they were going to sub Jack Martin on. I think he was even waiting. And then, of course, had the three-quarter time break. Jack Martin still had the warm-up top on. I think all of us were sort of sitting there astounded of why haven't they pulled this lever when he was just so incredibly hampered in that moment. But I don't know. I mean, he's a big game player. You almost have to risk them to a point. But if you're out there with a broken arm in a grand final, your team is clearly up against it. I mean, surely you've got to pull the trigger, don't you?
Especially with Jack Martin, who is a difference-making player. It doesn't always come off, but he's a guy that can change a forward line in an instant and kick three goals out of nowhere, and suddenly you're back in the game. It was strange, and it was strange if they weren't going to sub out Cameron, they waited so long to sub out Stanley. They needed to make that move quicker. Stanley gave them virtually nothing all day, so if you're not going to move Cameron out, they had to do the same with Martin. We saw Brisbane took the risk. Geelong didn't want to take the risk. They made that move at halftime, got Neil into the game, Lockie Neil. It worked for them, even though they were taking out a runner, and Geelong was seemingly too scared to pull that lever that they had.
Chris Fagan said he lost a lot of sleep over that decision to make. So he said he knew that after the game he was either going to feel like a genius or an idiot.
It's looking good, Fagan.
I mean, he could have just about garnered a vote, Lockie Neil. Like, he was just incredible. Talk about when the momentum was starting to swing, he was right there. And, you know, he never had any doubt in his mind, and he showed it today.
A few little things that we should touch on that Chris Scott mentioned in his presser. He had another crack at the sub rule.
Of course.
The sub rule while it's down. It was probably the last game of the modern sub rule that we've just witnessed.
And it was also the most important sub moment for the sub rule. And it's on its way out, which is a bit of a sad. It's almost an in memoriam, I think, today. For
and sort of goes to the narrative, doesn't it? I mean, we saw John Ralph and Glenn McFarlane's incredible piece about Chris and his sort of long-running war with the AFL. And geez, even after a 47-point drubbing as it was in the end, he sort of didn't miss an opportunity to give him one on the way out, did he?
No, he did not. How about Snoop Dogg? What do we think of the pre-game entertainment?
Yeah, not the best, I don't think. He was pretty good, Snoop. I think he did really well with what he had, but I think when you bring in a Snoop Dogg, it means the crowd is watching, not participating. I think that's what we got today. I think he did a pretty good job in the daylight, but it's a tough ask for an act like that, I think, Mike.
Yeah, it's an incredibly high bar after the last few years. Of course, Robbie Williams and Delta Goodrum basically set the standard a few years ago and had the place absolutely rocking. It didn't really seem like it was an in-ground thing. I thought he looked incredibly cool and he sort of had the room sort of bopping where we were. But it seems more of a vibe factor, I'm told, by some of the young people that were watching on TV. But I am also informed that he left the stage at 2 o'clock, left the ground at about 2:11 p.m. So, I don't know, maybe Patrick Dangerfield and Bailey Smith went with him. I didn't say that, Geelong fans. Wow, please don't come for me again.
I didn't see any Geelong players get on the Snoopmobile with him, the red buggy that carted him off at record speed. Like, almost the quickest I've ever seen a vehicle drive across the MCG. It was out of their
class. Had the motorhome out in Brunton Avenue too, which we've never seen before. So, you know what? He's put it's back on the global stage again. He really bought in until the game was actually on. So,
and you have to feel sorry for the people in the Shane Warne stand, the real people that sit over that side. They saw nothing. He was facing the other side, the complete whole performance. They saw the back of the stage.
Yeah, bring back the round
he
stage.
He did not turn around at one point at all during this performance. So sucks to be them, but I'm sure it was good on TV.
We might see a round stage next year in the end of the closed-off stage. One thing that might go as well is boundary throw-ins between the arcs. We're going to have last disposal rule probably next year. It felt like the game was umpired. It was umpired very well, I thought. But it felt like it was umpired without the insufficient intent rule. It was quite bizarre.
Yeah, that went away. We had about a million throw-ins, I think, in the first half. It just felt like it was over and over again, kicking up and down the wing. So hard work for the boundary umpires. Hopefully it's a little bit easier for them next year.
And a huge game on the stoppage count too. I think we surpassed the average that we've seen throughout this season by about the end of the second quarter as well. So I think Greg Swan was obviously watching very, very closely on two fronts, both as the new AFL football boss and, of course, the former CEO of the Lions. So he'll be happy that it went off without a hitch and that his Lions got the win. But, you know, obviously pressure is on to reduce the game time there too.
We can't finish this without talking about Dangerfield. You mentioned it there.
Yeah.
Huge in the prelim, not so much in the granny. What did you think of Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be sitting here incredibly disappointed with his performance. And that goes to a number of big-name Geelong players. We mentioned Bailey Smith as well, who was, you know, having a bit of a narc with Harris Andrews late in the game, which I just think was a pretty bad look, really. Like, I mean, your team's nearly 50 points down and you're sort of busy fighting with the opposition, who's now a back-to-back premiership player. Didn't think that was a great look from Bailey when the heat was on, but Danger, I think he would have had such high hopes after that performance in the preliminary final that, you know, he could come out here, get it done. It was effectively the only individual thing that he's yet to do in the game, of course, is to captain a premiership and potentially a Norm Smith. I know he would have been right up there in the calculations for people before the game, but no, I think he'd be incredibly disappointed tonight.
It felt like they got caught a little bit, Geelong, because Jeremy Cameron was off the field. I think they felt they needed Dangerfield forward to be a target, but then he wasn't winning any contests forward, and so the midfield started to turn, so they needed him in the midfield, but they didn't really put him in there.
So he needs to be everywhere and ends up kind of nowhere, right?
Yeah, they needed him to do one or the other, and he ended up not really doing much forward. So I think they just got caught with nothing when they needed almost both.
Yeah. The preliminary final, probably his best game in quite a few years, and it was his second in a month. They might need to reconsider how often they play him next season, how they manage him through the season. Might be difficult to say to the captain, look, you might only play 15, 16 games, but if that's what it takes to have him anywhere near that level next season, that might be what they need to do.
Definitely, yeah.
We're just looking ahead to 2026 as well. I think we're going to see a lot more of Geelong and Brisbane. Today they were vying for team of the century so far, basically. But you look at the additions next year. Brisbane pick up Oscar Allen and Sam Draper, at least, through free agency. Geelong probably get Ryan Marshall and James Warple. Doesn't look like they're going anywhere.
Charlie Kernow is still being whispered about as well as a potential target there. They're two sides that are continuously contending. History says if you lose a grand final by a bit, you don't really come back the next year. So pressure is on Geelong to, I guess, reverse that trend. But it's hard to see either of these sides really missing out. I chatted with Logan Morris in the rooms. He said, hopefully you get a couple and get better next year. So I think the Brisbane will be pretty fine.
It's not supposed to be like this. I think if you're sitting at home now watching this, you know, you follow a team that's maybe perennially down the bottom of the ladder, you're just incredibly frustrated with teams like this. But it just goes to show that destination clubs are destination clubs no matter what's going on. And if, as you say, Brisbane can add a little bit of cream there, could it be four consecutive grand finals? Isn't it amazing? We're minutes after this year's Grand Final. We're already looking at next year, but that's the nature of the beast. Will Ashcroft is the same. He basically said tonight that he can't wait to get back and start doing the work again. I think he's crazy. I think he needs to go and have a rest. But this is the way these guys think.
Yeah, I think it shows it's not completely broken, but the salary cap system doesn't work the way it's supposed to. Yeah. If a reigning premier can bring in two free agents at pretty good coin like Brisbane can, all credit to them. Obviously, that's fantastic work by the cap team there, and they're doing a great job, but the premier shouldn't be able to do that. So there's something that needs to be fixed along the way there somehow, but great work by Brisbane, obviously.
So the Lions back-to-back premiers by 47 points at the MCG. Make sure you catch up on all the post-game coverage on the Herald Sun and Code Sports websites. We'll be out at the post-game functions tomorrow as well at Geelong and Brisbane to keep following up all the news from today. Thanks very much.
I'm Andrew Rule, host of the podcast Life and Crimes. The problem for the police was there were far too many potential suspects. They obviously couldn't all be guilty. And he went to the people next door and said, "Have you seen Shauna?" And they said, "No, no." And he rushed back to the house and went to Shauna's room, and there was Shauna dead in her bed. This month on Life and Crimes, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.